The term lowest price technically acceptable is a misnomer. LPTA contracts usually wind up costing federal agencies more than other kinds of contracts. That is according to Eric Crucius. He's a partner at FedNexus Law. His practice is in the federal contracting space, and he says agencies are pushing the LPTA concept too hard. Eric, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for coming on today. I mentioned that your practice is primarily in this space, so you deal with companies who are up against the LPTA situation on an ongoing basis. And you're writing about this in Government Executive in response to an endorsement of LPTA from J. David Cox of the American Federation of Government Employees. What is the main reason why you think LPTA right now is overused and winds up hurting government efforts to get the products and services they need more than helping? Thanks for coming on, Eric.
Sure. Thanks for having me, too. I mean, I think a big problem with LPTA is it's being overused in industries and areas where it shouldn't be used. When you have highly regulated industries where the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, of minimal acceptability is okay and sufficient, for instance, if you're flying on a direct flight from Washington, D.C. to Atlanta, well, you know any commercial airline is going to provide you a relatively safe flight, and there's no difference between any of the airlines that you fly as far as safety goes and what you're getting. But when you look at different industries in the government contracting world, when the government's buying goods and services, you have marginal quality differences that can make a big difference in the end in how much it costs the government. And I see that time and time again when clients have issues, when procurements are switched to LPTA that were previously bid out as best value.
You cite a couple of examples in this piece, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon, about why LPTA is wrong. One of them is, you write, the best value premium is a misnomer. Why is that the case?
Because just because you're saying that you're going to use a best value scenario when looking at a procurement doesn't mean you have to pick a higher priced service or item. You could still pick the lowest price one if you think it's most appropriate. All you have to do is do a best value, what's called a best value trade-off analysis, and conduct that trade-off in a way that's clear and fair. And you could then go and pick the lowest priced bid that meets minimal technical acceptability. But at least the agency has the option of picking something that may be 10 cents more, but add a lot more value to the agency.
Now, I wonder if the converse of that could be true, because I hear vendors say all the time, there are contracts that, especially the Pentagon lets, that don't look on the surface like they're LPTA, but when we see who won and what the winning bid consisted of, it's obvious that's how they judged it.
Yes, and we're seeing that a lot in the bid protest realm, of course. I mean, all these agencies, DOD especially, is coming under increasing budgetary pressure, and they obviously have a great incentive to pick the lowest price when they can. And you know, we are seeing de facto LPTA procurements that are advertised as best value, but in the end, those are very difficult to protest, because you know, if they do a decent best value trade-off, they still have that option of picking the lowest priced one.
Another point that you make in this piece, Eric, is that LPTA is often used where it shouldn't be used. And you're right, the approach is popping up in situations where marginal product quality is a differentiator, and in the outcome-based services industry. Explain why that's problematic in each of those two examples, because I imagine that there's a difference between the two about why LPTA is bad in your view.
Sure. I mean, you have, and I don't mean to pull on heartstrings for this, but you have soldiers returning from war, and they need the products, you know, certain products and services in hospitals and VA hospitals. And you may have certain medical devices that you don't want to procure on an LPTA basis because, again, something that's just a little bit more money can go a long more way. And you see those things being procured on an LPTA basis sometimes, and more trouble. Problematic, at least that I see, is the services-based, outcome-based industries, where the government is buying an outcome and not necessarily people, faces and places, as they call it. And you know, these outcomes that they're buying on an LPTA basis, they're not getting the results that they should get. You know, they're getting that old saying, "Good enough for the government." And in the end, the government winds up spending a lot more money because they need another contractor to come in and clean up the mess. You saw that with, and it wasn't on an LPTA basis, but you saw that with healthcare.gov, where another contractor had to come in and essentially start from scratch again and rebuilding the website. And you see that time and time again in the outcome-based services industry. And services is not a place where LPTA is appropriated at all. So, I'm hopeful that once this happens for a few cycles, that the government will start moving away from LPTA, particularly in the services industry.
I don't disagree with what you're proposing, with what you're suggesting, because I know your experience has demonstrated that this has happened. What it strikes me as is more common, though, Eric, is simply a lack of accounting in an LPTA contract about what the total lifecycle cost of a particular solution will be. It may be cheaper up front, and this is, I imagine, especially true in the services area, but the upfront cost is low, but the long-term cost is more than a different solution might be.
I think you're exactly right and right on point. And that's, kind of the example I gave with the vacuum cleaner, which is actually true. And it happened in my, it was a very early example in my life of when years ago, buying this vacuum cleaner that was just barely sucked up the dirt, but it did the job, but it lasted a year and broke. And I did the same thing again a second time, lasted about a year and broke. And I finally wised up and spent a little bit more money on a vacuum cleaner that I've had for 6 years. So the upfront cost of that vacuum was just a little bit lower, and it would have won an LPTA procurement. But in the end, the best value for me was spending a little bit more money on that vacuum cleaner. And that's especially true on the services industry, as you pointed out.
Eric Crucius of FedNexus Law is my guest, writing in on LPTA. And we have a link to what he's writing at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And that's a segue to the third point that you make here, and that is that LPTA often ends up costing more. Is it primarily because of that lifecycle cost consideration, or are there other factors too, Eric?
That's a huge factor. I mean, you see a lot of cleaning up after the fact. And then on top of everything else, we've seen a lot of stories recently, and I've seen them on Federal News Radio, about how the federal workforce is shrinking. A lot of folks aren't being replaced when they retire or leave the government. And contractors who win on an LPTA basis, there's a few things. One, they often need a lot more handholding from the government, so you have a smaller government staff that has a lot more handholding to do. And the second thing is you have complicated regulations, especially labor regulations that have come out recently and some that have existed for a while, such as the Service Contract Act, new regulations associated with the 10-10 minimum wage for government contractors in certain instances. And the LPTA bidder, a lot of times, is not even aware of these regulations. So, could DOL would come in and do an investigation, and all of a sudden that bidder or that contractor is out, and they have to rebid this thing a year and a half later.
Pretty much everybody I talk to in industry brings up within the first 5 minutes of the conversation the protest landscape right now, Eric, as one of the most difficult elements of doing business in the government space right now. You write, in a price-only environment where loyalty and team play are given no consideration by the customer, filing a protest presents no negative implications for the vendor. So in an LPTA environment, a vendor is much more apt to see nothing to lose in filing a bid protest. Is it necessarily a corollary, though, that more best value contracts would lead to fewer protests in the environment that we're in right now, Eric? Is it a quid pro quo, do you think?
Not necessarily. I mean, you do see a lot of, a lot more contractors, or the same amount of contractors, going for less business. So that always encourages bid protests. But, I mean, I've had conversations with clients before where they've said that very thing. Well, this is LPTA, and it's always going to be LPTA, so if the government or the agency hates me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we've gone down that path in best value procurements where I've talked with clients and asked them, what do you want to do? This is, in the end, it's really a business decision. You have a ground to protest, and they tell me, well, we don't want to upset the customer. Our relationship's important with that customer. They're going to be essentially looking at me in the future in a best value scenario, and I don't want to ruffle feathers. And it's dropped, even if they have a really good ground to protest a lot of times. There's no incentive there in LPTA, and I don't necessarily think the correlation is true or the opposite is true here, just because of the shrinking budget and you have more of a frenzy to pick up these contracts. But I do think it will, over time, be the case.